The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I should go, and so I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
Welcome along to the GAR. This is the Hurling Show on a Monday. Got JJ and Conal here in studio, and hello to all the viewers on YouTube. Lads, what do you say after a weekend like this? How are we going to fit in all the action into an hour? You might be getting some overtime
today.
Unbelievable though, lads. What were the chances? Like, I mean, you might have predicted a draw in Limerick Cork. That's fair enough. It was nearly even money in the bookies. But the one on Saturday, like, I mean, to kick it all off, two draws. Sensational. So points all over the place, and we'll talk about that in a minute, because I think nearly... is there such a thing as having too many scores in a match? I don't know, but it was just unbelievable. Manly, man-to-man stuff for the most part. Unbelievable excitement, edge of the seat. Like, I can only imagine what it must have been like to be from one of the four counties. Like, yeah. I mean, you'd be losing your mind.
Like, Saturday was incredible. I was just saying, we had a match ourselves. I was listening on the radio for the first half, and I thought, and coming off the field, I was like, oh, surely Galway hammered them now at this stage, because we left, it was 1-7 to a point.
Yeah.
And then when you watch it back, it just incredible how Clare actually mentally stayed in and stayed ticking away.
Yeah.
And they just made a few positional changes, and it just seemed to work for them.
It did, yeah. And like, I mean, it was almost like Galvin to Kelly and Shane O'Donnell and Reedy, they almost just pulled themselves back into it. But we'll talk about that a little bit in the second half. So I want to talk to you about this, JJ, because, like, I mean, the hurling snobs were out in force all weekend, and I'm going to talk about
this.
I'm going to talk about that now in a little while. I'm not starting the show with
don't,
it.
Don't start
in
negative.
I don't want to be negative. But I do want to start on this, because they've made me look at this. Because, like, I mean, there was 123 points scored in 180 minutes. There was 73 wides across the weekend.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, that's 196 efforts at goal in 180 minutes. This has never been seen before. Yeah. Like, how is this happening?
It's phenomenal, because even the first day on the Saturday, that broke all records for scoring in the semi-final, and then we're coming into Sunday saying, how are we going to top that? But actually Sunday bettered again, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're breaking two records in one weekend. Absolutely phenomenal. But look, credit to the players, and I know there was a lot of wides, but I'd say the backs were putting them under intense pressure there as well, and taking a lot of them shots. I'd say if you look at them wides, it would have been down the hill 16 then for a majority of them, because whatever is the in regarding the wind down on there, it must have played a factor, because there was a lot of wides down at that end as well. Like,
yeah.
You know, so you'd be interested to see actually which end a lot of the score or a lot of the wides were, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Know, because
do you find Conal, do you find that hitting you're a forward? I won't ask you this, JJ. I found Hill 16 hard to kick into if Hill 16 didn't have a crowd in it. I thought the terrace was weird, but when there was a crowd, I didn't see a problem. But football obviously wouldn't be hitting the ball as high as hurling. Is Hill 16 an issue in hurling?
I don't know. I think maybe it's from Dublin or whatever, but I always used to prefer hitting into the Hill 16 side, be a crowd there or not. I've played them both, so
right.
It's for some reason it's just mentally easier, I think, hitting it into where there's not a big stand behind. Maybe that's just some players think that, but certainly when the crowd is there and you have Dublin supporters there, it's a lot easier playing into it. And I think a lot of teams don't like playing into that when they're playing against Dublin.
Yeah.
On the weekend, in relation to the scores, I think the scores is like, the angles are fine. That's the same nearly every year, but it's the distance they're getting now from the scores and the accuracy. It's just incredible, and like the confidence that the players have to go for shots back in their own half back line.
Yeah,
you know, and if they don't go over, you're under serious pressure from the management. Then, like,
yeah,
you know?
But is the ball too light, lads? Because you know it's becoming a tactical game now, and some lads are holding the half back line and they're letting their man on. And like, we'll talk about this again in part two. Kearney was given the freedom of Croke Park, obviously because Limerick were worried about the Cork full forward line.
Yeah.
But then these lads are able to pop out around midfield, be not marked, and top over points. Like, I mean, is this just a tactical thing, the light ball, that we're just going to see huge shootouts from now on?
It's great to see, though. You know what I mean? It's good complaint to have. We're seeing too many scores. You're not going to win too many shots at the goal. But yeah, look, it is gone very, very tactical in regard. And you see a lot of space there yesterday. All the teams are condensing in the middle and sprinting out to the sides, you know, and the puck out is going so far. And you see, with the hurling puck out, then you can catch it out. Because even Nicky Quaid's probably first puck out there yesterday, everyone went into their middle, and then Darragh Donovan actually went over, and Nicky Quinn went over the whole Cork half back in midfielder, and it bounced there around 30 yards out, and Darragh Dunham went in and scored a pint off it too, you know. So all these are pre-worked plays there as well.
Yeah, Jackie did good analysis on that last night. He showed a few examples of how to leave those spaces free.
They're not actually hitting people.
They're all doing that though, aren't they?
They're not hitting people, but it was very hard. Like, if you're stuck in the middle there and you think he's going left, but then he goes sprinting off onto the right, you know what I mean? Once you're in the middle, there's two options, but if you're out in the wing, where can he go? He can only go in the middle, or the ball goes over the line, so it's a huge advantage now for the forward, and you actually creating space, like, you know. And I don't even know if they know where the keeper's going to poke the ball. One is going left, one is going right, and then it's just game ball. If the ball bounces on the ground, it should be a forward's ball in as well. Like, you know what I mean?
So here's a question I want to ask you, JJ, and to the two of you, and that is, like, I mean, it looked to me yesterday that the full back line was marking their man tight, and the full forward line tight, and everybody else was just in a jumble. And maybe this is modern game in hurling, and there was no huge responsibility for who was picking who up. I think that's why we're seeing all these scores. Like, there was no real marking.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, I mean, I remember your game in the All Ireland final in 2014, the final. And this was the start of these working half forwards and, you know, dropping back, and the game being a little bit jumbled, like Gaelic football around the middle third, where you're not necessarily following someone all the time. Like, you know, you're dropping into space and all this. So now we're seeing huge high scoring games. The final score in that drawn game was 3-22 Kilkenny, 1-28 to Tip. So it was another shootout.
Yeah.
Described as one of the greatest games of all time. I remember tweeting after it saying, geez, nobody was really marking each other in that game. But Callanan took you, I think they take you from five from play. But anyways, when you hear the scoreline in the replay, so Kilkenny got 2-17, way down from 3-22. Tipperary got 2-14, down from 1-28, so half the number of points.
Yeah.
What changed in that second replay, or did you start marking them tight, or how can you explain that?
Yeah, we kind of went man to man the first day in the draw match, and it didn't really go well for us, really, more than anything. And then we kind of had players detailed to mark certain players. And then the second day, we had a conversation probably on the Monday, and it was kind of hot and heavy in training Monday night there to see where it went wrong, because we got took to the cleaners, no point in saying it, as a collective group. So we kind of decided, right, as a group now, we're going to nullify this Tipperary attack. It can't be a one-on-one kind of, it's your responsibility. You have to mark him. If I'm in a better position, I'm going to mark my man. That was the situation the first day.
Right.
Second day, then we're collective, 6 against 6. So it's a matter of what Tipperary player you're marking, closest guy to you, make the best decisions for the team more than anything. So we, as a collective group, we tried to condense it. We tried to get all the six forwards as close together as possible. So obviously the six backs were close together as well. It worked out fairly well for us. We got a couple of hooks and blocks in the first two or three plays. Paul Murphy was out blocking lads, Jackie was out blocking lads, and then that lifted our confidence really more than that, and it kind of rattled Tipperary as well, because they knew they were in the game. We tried to make it very, very physical as well, as much as possible, within the letter of the law too of the game.
Of course.
Do you believe that, you know? But no, it was just kind of 6 against 6. It wasn't 1-on-1, it was 6 against 6. And you've probably seen the two games there over the weekend, two different games Cork and Limerick were kind of playing. Probably in full back then was 1-on-1 really more than anything, and the Limerick half back then were trying to hold their positions as much as possible. Like, but then Daniel Carney got a lot of space, and he realised that very, very quickly. And that's for game intelligence from players as well. Like, he's seen that he wasn't being marked, he went all over the field, he ran himself into the ground, he went off injured because he just fatigued, he couldn't go anymore, you know. But no, that was the situation in 2014. We kind of collectively said, as a group, we'll man up to these Tipperary forwards as a group. And look, if one falls, we all fall, as simple as that, you know.
Right. So like, just quickly, Conal, so like, I mean, you obviously can't tackle the man in hurling. So, like, are defenders powerless to stop forwards now based on the quality of ball that's going in and how it's been moved through the lines? Like, are defenders really sitting ducks here? Because, like, I mean, I'm looking at performance of the weekend. There ain't no defenders across the 2 days.
Yeah, well, I think, as JJ was saying, if you're inside, look, I don't know, he'd know better than I would, but if you're inside as a full back line and you're marking top quality forwards, if the quality of ball going in is good, there's not much a full back line can do, really. They can just shadow him out and hope he doesn't score and try and get a block and hook. So you're looking really then and trying to condense the middle. If there's to stop the ball coming in, so you want your lads around the middle to be working as hard as possible, so the ball going in isn't as good.
Yeah.
Now, that's the theory in it, but it's very hard to do it.
Yeah,
it is. But, like, I mean, I'm sure it's frustrating that you can't actually tackle the man, because, like, I mean, now it's just like the minute a forward's getting the ball in his hands, you're nearly expecting a score, you know.
I think he's got a lot more tactical there as well, in regarding the forwards know where the ball is going to go even before it actually comes. As a full back, then you're trying to anticipate, you're trying to try and get out front as much as possible. But if you do, you're always kind of in the back of your head, if the high ball comes in there, I'm out in front here. Yeah. And the forward wants a back out in front of him. So if you're a turn, especially in your full back, if the guy catches the ball over you, you don't know where it is. He has in the back of it before you even realise it. So you can't go too far ahead of him. But even you see Patrick Horgan there yesterday, he was running into space even before the ball was pucked, reason being that he knew where the ball was going to go. If a certain player, I think they're working on so much in training, if a certain player, if a certain wing back has the ball, I think the forward can go. He can, he's 2 steps ahead of the cornerback because he's gone even before the ball isn't hit. And they're probably not hitting it directly into him, they're hitting it probably 10 yards in front of where they usually hit it. So the ball is bouncing in front of the forward. Like the likes of Patrick Horgan gets the ball in his hand, and you're not going to do that. And really, once he has the ball in his hand, you're hoping he misses. Really, that's all you're going to do. You know,
this is the reason I want to talk about this, because this is not just a feature of the weekend. This has been a feature of the whole season. Like these huge shootouts, you know, and that's just been it. And I'm just one. Like, it's obviously that this game has evolved to the stage now, where with the lighter slitters, the quality of ball going in, and then the tactics of maybe defenders not following men and leaving men free, that we're in for these treats maybe all the time. Another thing I wanted to move on away from that is Shane Dowling's interview, lads. It was great, wasn't it, to see him? And this is a fellow who's really confident, brilliant interviewee, has no problem actually being himself and actually being honest. And I thought he was absolutely brilliant. Like, I mean, he was on a high after pretty much winning the game for Limerick, as far as I'm concerned. He said he was disappointed not to start, and then says
that's an understatement.
And then he says it might give John a little something to think about. So gave the lovely little reminder to Kylie as well to make sure he knows, you know. And then gave a lovely little insight into the penalty, where Paul came in and says, "This is how championship games are won. Go for it." And I did. He said, "You know, I presume that's Paul Kinnock running in and stuck it in the top corner." Like, I mean, you ever seen a penalty like that? At that kind of, that's clutch stuff there, isn't it, to go for that top corner? I haven't seen one. I think Peter Duggan might have done one in the league into the top corner, but they generally don't go up there.
No, because it is risky enough, you know. And I know when this rule came in originally, we're taking penalties and you had to stay out to the 21. That was a bit of an issue in itself, you know, to make sure you lift the ball, you know, the distance out that you have to lift the ball and strike before you hit the 21. But I think the presence of mind of Dowling to hit that right in the top corner, usually you'd probably go low and chance to say, I might go left or might go right and hope it goes in. But to go top corner, incredible. And his interview, I think it just summarises the character of Dowling that he is, and the composure, like, really to come across like that, and to kind of nearly warn the fans to leave them alone for a while, except
how mature it was. I mean, it was just brilliant interview. Like, I mean, and like, just why can't they all be like that after a match? They're all so guarded and none of them want to do that. But what if Shane Dowling said wrong by being himself?
And
I loved the way
he was on a high after game,
on a
well,
high, and then but not immediately when he said, "Geez, you were brilliant, you must be delighted." Like, he was happy to say, "Geez, I couldn't believe how well it went," rather than "Geez, well, it's about the team now, straight." You know, what a lot of them say. The big one coming out of yesterday, lads, I wanted to ask you about, is what the hell's going on with Aaron Galan and dropping the hurl? Because this was a feature of, number one, the man can't kick football, right? So he might as well forget about that.
Give me a few tips, Connor, you know that?
This lad is the last lad that should be dropping any hurl, right? Although he's not great for goals from the hurl, because he missed an easy one against Kilkenny and a really easy one that Dowling set him up for. Yeah. Why is he dropping it, lads? This is new to me. Is there any theory behind why he might be doing it?
Only thing you can think of is that he's catching the ball, as we spoke of previously, catching the ball behind the back, and his hurl is over his shoulder. So as a back, you're going to hold on to his hurl straight away anyway, you know what I mean, when he turns, because you don't know where he's gone, like, you know what I mean. So,
but surely that would be blowing up though, JJ.
He's running through and goal. So obviously he should be blew up. Right?
So you think he's being fouled?
Sometimes he is being fouled. Now the second one, I think he dropped it very, very easy. Now, to be fair, you know, he should have been kind of more stronger. But that's something he's going to have to work on. He has the hard work done. He's after catching the ball over corner back. So just pull the hurl, like, make sure he's holding on to it, because he can't finish with defeat. I know.
Jeez, he can't. The first effort at a goal, this fella comes in. Now, number one, if he's being fouled, you'd imagine he'd just stand and throw his hands up, or he's just playing on. Maybe it's not a penalty. Fair enough. Yeah. But the technique of how he tried to score that first one, he tried to put that off the inside of his boot. It looked like into the top corner. The degree of difficulty in that in Gaelic football is unbelievably high. What was he thinking of with a slitter?
Yeah, you wouldn't even see the gooch trying to...
No!
And with a slitter, it's nearly impossible. I think if you're going to kick the slitter, it's like toe down.
Like Dignan said, toe down and just punt it in.
And see what happens. It may go in the top corner, might just screw off, but just keep the head down and kick it straight, because trying to curl the slitter into the top corner is never going to happen.
And then the second one was completely kind of screwed off his boot. Like, I mean, he fancies himself. I text someone on the Limerick squad last night, I won't say who it was, and I says to him, does Gillan have a background in GA? He seems very confident with the foot. And the reply guy says, he plays with Patrick's Well. They're a hurling club. They'd puncture a Gaelic football if it went into their ground. So all the hurling snobs will absolutely love that one. So maybe Gillan has no background, or if he does, it's like at a level for Patrick's Well that they just they're ashamed of him.
But it's still incredible to think that, like, he should have got three goals, but he still, like, he could have ended it with 3-14, 3-15. And he still gets 13 points from freeze. Like, it's just incredible that the talent of the man.
Yeah. He's brilliant in the air, though. I never saw someone do you know what, we'll save this and we'll save Gillan for performance of the weekend, because I never saw someone give Spillane such a high scutcheon there. Like, I mean, he totally cleaned him. I was actually disappointed with Joanne Cantwell that she didn't ask Gillan when she interviewed him for being man of the match of why the hurls always drop. Now maybe she did and it didn't go into the edit, but, like, I mean, that's what I would ask Aaron Gillan. Why is this happening to you? Because we're just speculating on it. But the other thing I want to talk about, lads, was the Peter Duggan point. Like, I mean, there's a few different bits then from Saturday, that the unbelievable skill. Like, I mean, even from yesterday, Garrod Hegarty and Keane Lynch, the way they just chop the ball down and pop it back up into their hand. Like, I mean, and it's not just once to do this. It's like they don't need to get into a ruck. They just reach the hurl in, chop it back, and it's in their hand and they're gone. And then you have Duggan's point, which is just something out of fairy tale. You have Pat Ryan's goal, which was a little lob, and immediately when I saw that, I thought back to Austin Gleeson's goal last year against Cork as well, when the game was done and he scored that fantasy goal. I'm thinking of Nash almost being embarrassed towards the end of a All-Ireland semi-final that they probably should have won. Like, I don't know where to even start, lads. Peter Duggan's point, like, I mean, have you ever seen anything like that?
Outrageous. Like, lads hanging out of him, and you know, he'd taken in his hand twice before that, still going through, and, like, to throw the ball over someone, you know, to take a strike on it, it's just the skill level alone. But even to try it in a top game, you might try it with your club potentially, but not in an All-Ireland semi-final and everything at stake, and to go straight over the bar, it's just unbelievable.
Lads hanging out of him.
Aidan Hart had him in a bear hug, like. Aidan Hart didn't know where the ball was, flicked it over the head. It'll flick over the side, slap over the bar, even to get a connection on the ball itself. Even in the first half, he scored a brilliant point there as well, and went up to the ball in the air and took it, flicked the ball on the ground straight through over the bar. And again, like, you know, when he hits the ball, he hits it and it goes dead straight. He's some slap on the ball.
Even the way he takes the freeze, it's great. Like,
it's unusual. Like, it's a bit like TJ. They're low trajectories, aren't they? They're a bit like TJ Reid. He's like, I mean, he's a huge man. He could put it up to Galway. Like, there's not too many that can hang four Galway monsters hanging out of you.
Straight past him.
But, like, I mean, I presume the wrists need to be unbelievable there to get it not just reach that, connect it, but also get the flick on it to get it to go over the bar. Like, I mean, there's not much. When you take skills of scoring points and hurling into consideration, that he
never really practiced something like that.
No,
because how could you? Like, there was defenders hanging out left, right, and said it was just pure instinct that we got it, and he had to actually hit the ball over the bar as well. A phenomenal score, absolutely brilliant score. Everyone got up off their feet after it, you know.
No, they definitely did. Was Burke taking that sideline at the end, lads? This was obviously, he had lost his mind at this stage, and he's going now. Peter Duggan went for a sideline over the same side as well and blasted it across the goals, and, like, the degree of difficulty from there, I don't think even Joe Canning would have taken it on from there. And you have Niall Burke taking that on, knowing that we're talking seconds left here. And you know, they always say put the ball dead,
corner,
put the ball dead, but that's if time's up. But, like, I mean, time wasn't up there, it was nearly up. So would he not just have scuttered that back to someone? And
really, when you see the headlines there the next day,
do you think that's headlines? That's unfortunate if it was. But I think he'd maybe, Jesus, sure, I'm watching it on telly and I'm losing my mind a little bit just watching it. Maybe he just got carried away in the whole
emotion.
You see
the other side there, Tony Kelly, he slapped over a sideline there with probably 5 or 6 minutes to go as well. Like, you know, and if that had went wide, you were saying, what are you doing? Like, you know, the ball's gone dead again. Like, so, like, a game of inches, really, more than that. And if it goes over, you're a hero. If it doesn't, then
realistically, that's not going to go over. And what you're doing there is you're giving Toohey a free puck out, he'll have a slitter waiting, and bang, you've gone up the field.
Yeah, look, it probably was the wrong thing to do, but what I would say is sometimes you're taking a sideline at that, and it's the last couple of minutes of the game or whatever, nobody's looking for it.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Nobody wants the ball after.
Like, that's true, yeah, yeah. They don't want to mess it up, yeah.
All you see is numbers in your back,
And probably in a way, everyone doesn't want it because they're bollocks.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So they're like, actually, okay, we'll just give him a chance to take this and we'll take our breath. So yeah, maybe that's it.
So what does he do? Does he hit it down into the corner where there's nobody and then the ball is still kept in play? I heard Donal O'Grady saying, you know, bring it down to the corner or else put it back over the sideline. But like, it's easy to say that.
Yeah.
When you're there taking the ball and there's no one looking at all and you're only just defenders in front of you,
yeah.
Look, I'll have a shot, see what happens.
Jeez, I never thought of putting it over the sideline. Yeah. Can you take a sideline to yourself? No, could you roll it out?
No, you can't hit.
Can't hit it.
So it has to go a certain distance before someone else can.
Right.
So it'd be very difficult.
Yeah. I never thought of putting it back. Jeez, it would be a very cynical thing to do, is just to knock the sideline out over for a sideline and pin Claire down. Yeah. That's a brilliant idea, Conor. Like, I mean,
trademark that one, Conor.
What did you think of Claire keeping Galway waiting, lads? Because like, we've all played the game at every level and we've seen this happen. Mm. And like, it can be a game of chess. Well, we won't leave till they leave. And then you saw them coming out for extra time and they wouldn't leave. Neither team would leave. Yeah, yeah. And we've all seen this. Like, we've seen teams doing it to you, and it's a real dirty thing to do on a bad day to another team, leave them out in the rain. I've heard it being said. I've been in dressing rooms where you would do it. There's some managers would be very much into this. It's not often you see it in an All-Ireland semi-final on a nice day. Donald Maloney came out and says, to be honest, when you go 9 down to Galway at halftime, you have a lot of stuff to fix and the players want to discuss things. You only get one shot at this. And look, if we caused anyone any offence, we're sorry. But we've had it. Okay, if we've caused anyone offence, we're sorry. Now, I don't believe Donald Maloney when he says that we just need to discuss things. They knew right well. They got the knock on the door. They knew they were leaving Galway out for a long time. Like, I mean, it's unsporting.
It is unsporting, but it's an unusual tactic to like, fair enough, if they were in the middle of a conversation and they're trying to rectify something, 100% stay in the dressing room. But if they're just waiting, oh, sure, we'll wait another couple of minutes here now, and no one said that inside the dressing room. Like, I'd be hoping now that the players were in full flow and they're trying to organise the whole thing, that it wasn't just a pre-organised tactic. It just happened to happen that particular way. But look, only the Clare dressing room know that, you know, that kind of way. But I'd be interested. I don't know. I can't see that kind of a tactic kind of happening. Really,
like, well, you get the knock. Okay, but you get the knock, right? Yeah. So you know you're going over, right? Well, so they're saying, I don't care about that knock. Yeah. I don't care, Galway, out there. We're going to stay talking. And that, regardless, I don't think any team is in sitting there going, all right, we're looking at your watch. Yeah, yeah. That doesn't happen. No. Yeah. But you know your speech has gone over. And you know, by continuing on your talking and discussing stuff, you have enough time. You know that you're playing mind games outside as well. And you're like, we don't care about what's going on out there.
Well, I would say it could be something as simple as the management, like, were probably didn't know what to do. They took probably longer than usually that needed to try and rectify and make positional changes, and I'm sure they didn't all agree, so that maybe went on a little bit longer. Maybe some of the players were speaking, so that they have a procedure to go through, and every team has their own way of doing things at half time, and it just happened to go a little bit longer, and it's like, well they're out there waiting, let them wait, like, they can wait.
That's how it works usually, isn't it?
I don't think it's like a two fingers, we're going to stay here another 5 minutes because we got the knock. And but look, sometimes I've been in dressing rooms where it does happen, we're going to leave them wait now because like, they're flying us, so let them sit out there for another bit. But I don't think it really came into it with Claire. I've never heard Claire do it like that before.
Unusual.
You give them the benefit of the doubt this time.
Okay,
we'll again though next week.
It's
a tactic,
right, lads? I think we're in about 26 minutes in now, and we've had a nice chat about the games. Can I talk about hurling snobbery now? Are you giving me the green light?
Banned from that,
because this was I need to understand the mentality from hurling people, and we've talked about with you before, JJ. I want to get your thoughts on it as well, Conal, because why on earth can we not just appreciate, I won't say we because I've never played hurling, so I'm obviously not in the group, I'm not in this kind of gang, but I'd look at those games and I'd say brilliant, absolutely brilliant, and never would I feel the need to say this is the best game in the world, because it's like, I mean, it's played at a high level by 10 counties in Ireland. Like, let's call a spade here. Like, the Gaelic football All-Irelands are always got higher viewership figures than the hurling, so it's not even the most popular Gaelic game. So how is it the best game in the world, right? This is okay. Now, JJ, it's not an accusation of yours. Why can't we just appreciate the games for being brilliant without this obnoxious, arrogant, it's the best game in the world kind of stuff?
I wouldn't say so obnoxious now, to be honest with you. You know what I mean?
And it is.
Well, they're saying it later. I don't think they're actually 100% saying that. It's kind of a Twitter statement, really, more than anything. You know, kind of way to it. And then when you see on Twitter someone says something, and then another person is trying to outdo that and outdo that, and yeah, that's the way it happens after matches like that. But I don't think it's obnoxious, to be honest with you. They're appreciating the sport that.
Look, well, I'll give you a good analogy of how it can be seen as obnoxious. See, you believe it's the best game in the world, so you would probably agree with it. I'm on the outside, which I think it's the best game in the world. It's a
but
subjective.
Number one, it can't be the best game in the world because it's only played by a small.
But anyways, thinking it's the best game in the world is a subjective opinion. That's your opinion. You're not saying it's best in the world. So a fella sent me a tweet this morning. He says he's two friends, right, and they both got a new car. So first friend says, I had a great time driving my brand new car at the weekend. So you'd say, alright, that's fair enough, right? The other friend says, I had a great time driving my new car at the weekend, and my brand new car is the best car in the whole town. You'd say, what a dickhead. Why does the second lad have to add that extra bit in? Why can't hurling fans not just love the game? Everybody can see how brilliant they were. It's like you only have to have two eyes. Why does this half self-congratulation of being the best game in the world, Conal, have to come into the mix?
Are you saying this because you're not in the hurling gang?
Well, I've never played, you see, so I'll never be seen as a hurling person. That's the reality. You're on thin ice with that football background you have, Conal.
I don't know. I think it's just more of a tongue-in-cheek comment that people are saying, because it's so exciting, so much stuff is happening compared to the football. Like next week's football will be a nightmare to watch compared to last weekend. So I think it's just so much happens. There's so many things that can go on in a hurling game as opposed to a football game, and I think they're just saying, look, this is a great game, it's the best game in the world. It's like saying your man's the best car in the world.
Well, it's the best sport in the world. See, this is the thing. Now, last Sunday's Super 8's game, Galway, Kildare, Monaghan, Kerry were two brilliant games. Now, there would never be people on Gaelic football saying this is the best game sport in the world. Now, I would have criticisms of Gaelic football fans where they like to compare it to soccer. So they'll say, isn't this great how these amateur lads can give us that entertainment when those lads are crossing the soccer? You know, and I don't see why there's any need to even bring soccer into it. Can I not just say that was a brilliant game? I'm going to read you out some of the tweets that I collected from the weekend.
You were
right?
Busy last night, Willie, weren't you?
So this is the first two. Now, these are only the tweets that are from higher profile people that you might actually know. Like, there's thousands of hurling snobbery tweets that I have to just wade through. Like, I'm not going to read them out here. So this is the greatest game in the world, Brigade. So this is Richie Power, brilliant player, love Richie. Can this weekend's action get any better? Once again, hurling proves it's the best game in the world, right? Then you have Shane McGrath from Tip, great player again. These are all in caps lock now. Greatest game in the world. End of discussion. So he's not even entertaining a debate about his opinion.
You may give him a ring, like, Willie. Give him a ring there and debate with him.
This is Nigel Farage levels of kind of debate here. My opinion is better than the fact, right? So then we went all Game of Thrones, right? So this is a new one on me, this kind of Game of Thrones stuff. So this is Carlo GEA. We don't normally comment when we're not involved, but truly, and without any shadow of a doubt, the game of hurling is gifted to our nation by the gods. By the gods, right? So then there's another fella, Alan Nash, he's a hurling referee. Game of the gods, hashtag hurling. Then you have a lad, Roy Curtis, he writes for the Sunday World. You might remember he wrote an open letter to Neil McGee before years ago, right? So he started in on this. The only thing I remember about him is this open letter, but we talked about this on the football show before. Calibrate beauty any way you will, but hurling is this perfect pitch, ravishing, dazzling, gorgeous, stunning, a vision without flaw. Galway and Clare delivered a thunderous feast for the senses, a gift from the gods. Game of Thrones, which god has gifted us this brilliant brilliant gift, right? So then this on Sunday, Curtis is at it again, right? So this lad must be away with the fairies. So sitting in Croke Park, tears streaming from my eyes, don't believe that for a second. So many narrow definitions of what it is to be Irish, but Christ Almighty, this is a beautiful thing. Oh, hurling, thou art divine. A visceral sense of identity, belonging, scream out loud joy, a soul soars. Someone passed the sick bucket now with that kind of stuff. Then you have Conor Cusick. I'm finishing up on this before I go too far in it, but you can kind of get my point reading this now, and me immediately already being on a high because I'm a huge hurling fan and just looking at this going, Jesus, this is a bit much, a bit obnoxious here. So Conor Cusick, obviously Don Logue's brother, those villages, towns, cities and counties that don't practice hurling, forget about your football biases. You exist in a country that has the greatest sport on earth. Can you imagine your people being part of such a phenomenal weekend of sport like this? Go away. Like, I mean, are you for real? Like, do you not think this is completely, maybe you didn't see these tweets and you might know why I'm a little bit kind of annoyed about this, but can this not appreciate her two brilliant hurling games, all are in semi-finals, without this absolute nonsense.
Well, I suppose what it is really, the games are so good, people want to associate themselves with that particular, that kind of occasion, and the occasion was the two semi-finals over the last weekend. So in a way they're just trying to associate themselves with the spectacle that we've seen. In regarding, look, it's a great spectator sport to watch, and yeah, you have great pride in it is Irish, like, you know what I mean, so you would have great pride in that particular thing. But look, each their own, you know what I mean. If people want to put that on Twitter, no issue whatsoever with it. Yeah, back in a way,
it's, yeah, just to reflect, I think it reflects,
him,
it reflects, I think it reflects on, like, this, I don't know if it's kind of an insecurity that it's kind of second fiddle to.
Shea was tweeting on it as well. He's converted now, Willie. You may get that to bandwagon.
I've tweeted though, like, because I'm a football man, and I've no problem saying that hurling this year has by far overshadowed football. She'd want to be a lunatic not to think that it hasn't. Yeah. But why, when you have great games, does a hurling person have to just put down, you know what I mean, in comparison to football? Like, you don't need to be a genius to know football has got a lot of issues at the moment, and it's slow, and it's nowhere near the level of excitement for the most part. Now, you have to remember, for the football, if you had all the Division 1 teams split into two groups of five, playing each other in round robins, and then playing each other all around quarterfinals, semifinals and finals, and maybe have to play a qualifier against some shitty team and get back in, that would be a much better championship as well. You know, you're not playing with the same deck. You've got a brilliantly tiered hurling championship where all the top teams play each other, and not only do they play each other now, they play each other in round robins, so they're playing each other so many more times. In football, yes, there are tactical issues, but there's also structural issues. I don't see the need to put the boot into football. Just enjoy a brilliant weekend that you've had.
Yeah, I have no problem in regarding anyone praising hurling, like, no issue whatsoever, but I have a problem in if they bring the football into equation. It's an uninvited argument from my perspective. It's like Ronaldo or Messi, you know what I mean? Well, I can't just appreciate about them. Like, you know, just praise your own, no has to die, but don't kind of dismiss the other. There's no point. What's the point in doing it? You know what I mean? Everyone has their own preference. As a young kid, you've opportunity to play both. And as I said, if you want to support football, you want to support hurling, each to their own. Praise your own. But again, it's just the kind of a thing that there's no need to bring in negativity into the whole thing either. Like, you know,
no, well, there isn't. I'm a negative sort of person. I don't mind the negativity. But you're a hurling man, I'm a football man. Conal, you're both. Is there an insecurity about hurling that they need to shout from the rooftops and not be negative about their sport? Like, in comparison maybe to football?
No, it's probably the same maybe around the country. Like, I think football is probably a more popular sport than hurling, obviously. So anytime hurling, it gets the better, you know, it looks better or it is better than the football here, I think they're just trying to blow it up and try and give it a bit more, hype and give it a bit more, you know, let more people know about the sport. I wouldn't be reading too much into the comments. I think some of them comments are a little bit outrageous. Like, they're just sitting at home, I think, on their own, maybe hungover and just
looking for a few favourites.
Maybe that's why Curtis was crying. He had a really bad hangover. Like, okay, we'll come back in part come back in part two and we'll look at the matches.
I'd never be allowed to go off and eat and have a shite, like, and go off a slob or whatever. Like, I was always doing a bit.
All I remember is I thought I was going to get clobbered on the way in there. I threw the ball up in there. I don't know, it was pure luck, no, in fairness. Pure luck. It's fucking bullshit, as you've seen yourselves.
All right, we'll start with Cork Limerick, lads, because it's most freshest in everybody's mind. And, like, I mean, we mentioned there at the start of the show how kind of tactical this had gone and how Limerick leaving players back in the half-back line. And you look at the damage Daniel Carney did, and I don't know if that's a trade-off to what Patrick Horgan scored. So Horgan only gets a point. You'd take that. Daniel Carney probably got three or four, but before the start of the game, you'd take that in a second. So in a way, Limerick's tactics worked, even though in a kind of conflicting way didn't look like they worked.
Yeah, it's kind of a case in point that you're trying to stop their best forward as much as possible there as well, and keeping Patrick Horgan to a point is probably, as a fullback, then to be happy enough with themselves, you know, that kind of way. But they did have protection now. They were born instead at number 5 position. He didn't care where Daniel Carney went. His position was to stay number 5. If he goes over, let someone else worry about it. And they were holding position as much as possible. And he got a bit of ball himself, right? But Daniel Carney did do a lot of damage. But he done a lot of work around the field there as well, which Daniel Carney's going to do anyway. I don't know if Dermot Burns would be as effective going following Daniel Carney as well. And he could have followed him. Carney would have hit a lot of ball. But then he would have left a lot of space in front of the full back line there as well. So probably tactically, probably is very, very disciplined from Dermot Burns.
Yeah.
As well, you know yourself, when you're marking someone to get a couple of pints, you want to go up on him, but he was very disciplined on fairness. And he's dead five all the time as well.
But even for the management, like, I mean, but it's the way Cork play which make me think it was a mistake, because when Kearney's back floating around, he's being picked out because Cork play through the lines and give lovely little tappy balls. Yeah. Whereas if Cork like to get it down long, you'd be like, well, Kearney's going to be bypassed anyways and Burns will pick up a break. But it's just seemed to not be working at all.
Yeah, I suppose Limerick maybe kind of just hoped that other lads would kind of pick up the space that Kearney was probably getting into, and the most important thing was to not leave as much space, you know, for Horgan to run into. And I suppose that's what every full forward line really wants, is that pocket of space, because you've seen on the telly how they were lining up. They were lining up together and popping the ball into space, and they were running out. It's very hard to stop that as a defender.
Once
the ball has been popped into that space and you have a fair idea that it's going there and you're getting a yard ahead of your man, forget about it as a defender, or you're not going to get there.
Yeah.
So I suppose Limerick were trying to hold that and limit that space as much as possible, but then taking a chance that someone else would take Kearney. Look, I don't know, did it really pay off? Like, Kearney was unbelievable there for a certain period of the game.
Yeah.
I know he went off injured, but then it just showed that when he had to be brought back on again, like, I think, like, I'll probably talk about it later on, but the bench made a huge difference.
Yeah.
Obviously,
it
goes without saying, but how is there not top quality players in the Cork panel that aren't pushing to get that should be on, instead of bringing on lads that are injured again?
I don't get that. Like, Kearney was clearly limping. Like, I mean, whether he's injured, he'd cramp, he'd something wrong with him anyways. But, like, I mean, he came back on. Galway brought back on Joe Cooney in extra time. Like, I mean, what's going on here for these big traditional counties?
Seamus Harnedy was injured as well.
Yeah.
And
he left him on
because they're hoping now he'd get a couple of scores, you know what I mean? So that's one thing that Cork will have to do now.
But that's what the league here was for. Where are these players that they're meant to have found?
Probably thought they had him, you know, that kind of. But Alan Cadigan, like, again, being injured, it's very hard to factor that into the start of the year, but they're going to have to. I think the under 21s are in the semi final as well. Yeah. So they're trying to find a few players off them, give them a strength and condition now for 3 or 4 months over the winter, but they're going to have to locate three or four different options now for coming off the bench, because you're seeing that Limerick's just the bench they had was phenomenal.
Yeah, but you'd almost forgive the Joe Cooney one a little bit. Joe Cooney was brought off after 52 minutes, so you'd say there might be more left in him
that,
now. Like,
honest,
I mean, sometimes he's
big man too, like, and
big
he
man.
Might have been a free, like, you're not kidding.
Like, when you sit on the bench even after 52 minutes, you do seize up. Like, you see the rugby players in a sin bin, they go onto a bicycle machine just to stay limbering up. But Joe Cooney couldn't have been right going back on, even though he went back on.
When you're took off in normal time, you don't expect to go the same anyway. So you just sit there, you're waiting for your, I suppose, with the rugby lads, they might expect to come back on again, but they wouldn't think it's going to go the extra time, so they were just sitting there in cold, like, coming back into it. Like,
you're tuned out though, you're not in the headspace to be coming.
You'd be
like,
disappointed yourself being took off anyway.
Usually, when you're on the bench, you're focused, you're thinking, right, I might get in.
Yeah.
But when you're taken off, you're not focused anymore. No. You're sitting back then and you're just kind of watching. You're not in the, you're tuned out.
Yeah.
You don't really.
Get me out of here.
You kind of are, and they could be disappointed. You could be doing a bit of bitching about, geez, I didn't think I was doing that bad.
But I tell you what will be difficult for Cork and the Cork management team is, if you were a player 17, 18, 19, 20 and you didn't get on, and you were being told all week and all come months, like, you're doing well, just keep it,
because
that's what everyone's been told, you know, just keep with it, keep it. And then you see two or three lads that have came off nearly injured and going back on again.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm wasting my time here.
Yeah, I know you would. You'd be disillusioned. Like, I mean, Limerick didn't have that issue because Limerick, like, I mean, John Kiley was talking afterwards and said, and Declan Hannan was talking as well, talking about the A versus B's and that the B's sometimes beat the A's.
Yeah.
And you look at the forward line, like, I mean, I'm not going to lie or think you're, I actually recorded this game because I had a match myself, but I couldn't believe it that the recording was on about 2 hours 48 minutes, so there was about 48 minutes left and we were heading towards the end of, because I was pausing it and starting it again. I was like, there's no way this went extra time. Why is the recording going on that far?
Because
Limerick were 6 down, and it was like, but the minute that full time was over, lads, there was only one winner that game. The way Pat Ryan, the way Peter Casey and the way Shane Dowland had come on, the Cork lads looked dead in their feet. Like, there was only one winner, really, wasn't there?
Well, especially the way Dowling and Casey came on, they looked like they were on a mission. Like, they're like, I'm going to show you now why I should have been playing. Mm. And everything worked for them, absolutely everything. And the touch that Dowling has, it's just unbelievable. I've seen it in a few challenge games we've had him, but there again on the weekend, and a ball that he shouldn't be getting, even the ball that he got running through, it just popped up and he grabbed it straight away.
That was the reaction. And he drove it a mile over the bar.
I think there's something
inspirational about the way he put that so high, wasn't there? It was almost like ran straight back out to his position.
Yeah, he knew exactly, because he was never going to be locked down there as well. He just made, he had the distance and he just up in the air straight away. There's no way. But I liked his timing of his runs, even for the penalty there as well. He got gambles on the breaking ball in behind it, and he done that in the first half in extra time, and he done in the second half to get the penalty as well, like, you know. So yeah, great performance for Shane Owen, but the bench was phenomenal, and then Seamus Hickey to come on the back there as well, like, you know. So he was kind of shoring up that as well, and after a hard game for the Limerick backs there as well, just for a bit of experience, come on, a bit of physicality to come on there. He hit the legs, then he went in and Colin Ham, and he came on there as well. So that was a good matchup. Like, John Colley got everything right now, but he obviously has the whole Limerick squad tuned into exactly what kind of reason. But then again, if you look at the Kenny match, the subs came on and won it for him again. So they know what changes they're going to make even before the game finishes up, because they know that the guys are going to come on and do a lot of damage as well. And fresh legs, is just hard to beat fresh legs in Cork.
Fresh legs from lads that have a very good shout to start.
Yeah.
See, Cork lads are bringing on fresh legs, but they're clearly B standard. Like, I don't want to be disrespectful, but they're not as good as what's like Seamus Harnady comes off. Do you know what I mean? Like, how are you? You're not going to replace him. He's top level.
Yeah.
But you look at the players that when Limerick brought them off, like Mulcahy was flying it. You know, Shane Dowland, Ryan, and Casey.
They've all experienced big days.
These lads would have ideas of getting on ahead of Mulcahy ahead of Gallan. You know what I mean? That's the difference, and that's where Dublin senior footballers are at, and where you know. But like, I mean, not many counties have these lads, 9 potential starters.
Yeah, that's true. But on another side of it, I was disappointed in Cork that they let the other team get a run on them. You know, they conceded 5 or 6, 7 points without doing anything.
Like, breaking up the play or anything.
And usually you'd have an older lad maybe going down, or contact lens, or take off the helmet, or do something, just break something. But it just seemed to be in shock. They're like, what's going on here?
From the 60 minute on, they didn't score until 72nd minute, where Patrick Hogg got the equalising point.
Yeah,
that was phenomenal. And Limerick just chipped away a point after point. Yeah. It wasn't a case they didn't have possession, or it was a couple of goals, rapid couple of goals, but it was actually just points that came back on it. You know,
saw people saying,
need someone to win something at that particular ball. Yeah. A big player to come out, win a big ball, win a free, get the ball, get and break their momentum, and then kind of go on again. But one stood up for Cork at that particular time.
Because Dowling came on and got the inspirational free. That was brilliant. And then they got another one. But Cork responded to them too. So it's not like Dowling set it going. Cork responded with two. So we're back to the square one again. And then kicked off with the 7 in a row. So it was like, no Cork lad kind of stemmed the tide. And it was just, but it was like pure heart at that stage from Limerick, wasn't it? Like, I mean, we talked about this in the podcast before. To play a lovely brand of hurling. Like, you look at Gallan. Like, I never saw Spillane get such a roasting. They give diagonal balls. And like, I mean, they never give their own ball down the wing unless you're completely free, because backs are beating your race out to that. They're giving a ball, Gallan's not even having to move and he's catching it. Do you know, like, I mean, they seem to have their attacking kind of game plan down to a tee.
Yeah, and I think it kind of, that lends into, you know, all the madness that happens there in the middle when there's a big battle. You know, your instinct, just your tactic nearly is, don't give the ball in straight line. If you're giving a ball in, make sure it's diagonal, and you're missing the centre back, or you're missing the sweeper, that you're giving it long, so the lads inside know that if the ball is on my side, chances are I'm going to make the run this way, or, you know, to the left or the right. So they all know that, and it's very hard for a defender to mark that. There's so much space there, and you're hedging your bets. Will he go up the line? I'm not sure. You know, will he go high? And you know that I'm going to make this run. The ball has been popped into that space.
They know it's coming. So say if Burns,
the ball
has
is always coming to the outside of the forward as well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So the forward is always between the back and the ball. So it's a huge advantage to the forward as well. Like.
So if Dan Morrissey or Burns,
Declan Hanlon's brilliant on the ball.
He does it too.
He never panics. He can right or left, very, very comfortable. But as a forward, he played in the forwards before, more comfortable centre back, but he knows what ball, kind of ball he wants.
Yeah.
And
he
gives it in, like, you know, because a lot of lads go back centre back and then they're shooting for points because he has the distance. He won't be able to score, but he's playing lovely ball into space and playing into the forwards' advantages too. So he's a brilliant player, and he came into it in the last 10 minutes for Limerick as well.
He caught
a couple of balls.
And Keane Lynch gives lovely ball too. And the half forward line, all the half forward line give lovely ball. It's very obvious. Paul Kinnerk is a renowned coach.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, I do find that in Gaelic football, the renowned coaches now are lads that are getting lads in, everyone behind the ball, and teaching transition. And I think actually coaching good forward play has gone out of the game completely. But this is a clear thing they've worked on, is this ball into the forwards and their movement up there. And now Cork work on it as well, but like, I mean, it just goes to show what a what a beautiful game it is to watch when you see this level of coaching come into the game.
It's the best game in the world, isn't it?
I was nearly getting close to it. See, I agree with this. It's just these other dickheads turned me off it. David, I want to say this. I want, like, lads, after the hurling season we're after having, like, let's call a spade, it was unbelievable. And, like, I mean, one thing I wanted to ask you about is Connolly Han, lads, because he started in the full forward line against Clare. I was down there in Thurles, and he started in the full forward line again. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Connolly Han is a centre half forward who the centre half back doesn't know what to do with him because he has to be marked, and he's drifting to either wing, and he's a torment. When he's in the full forward line, he's not half as effective. Why are they doing this with him?
It's hard to tell. Like, I suppose, was it Harndy was supposed to be an injured coming into this game, and where they're putting him in there, he'll do all the running in the full forward line there as well. But he struggled for the first half. We mentioned now in halftime yesterday that didn't see him on the ball, but he got a run on, in the first few minutes. He got a point. He has to score very early in the game.
Yeah, but he was that in centre when he came into it, though? Yeah, didn't he come out?
He has to get his own confidence up. Like, you know, he could actually turn the ball to Patrick Horgan, but he went on and took the score himself. But then he came into the game. He got a cracker of a goal as well. He absolutely brilliant goal. But you need to get him going, get him on the ball early. But that's up to the other Cork players to find him with the ball as much as possible. You have somebody like Conor Lehan in the full forward line or in the half forward line, no matter where he is. Get him the ball as quickly and as much time as possible, because if you are feeding him ball, he can't really do much if the ball's not coming in either, like, which is probably to your point, he should be out centre forward. But if he is full forward, get him in the ball as quickly as possible as well. They weren't doing it, weren't giving the ball. Second half he came into it a lot, but you're expecting, like, the last 10 minutes, that's when you need him. You know what I mean? You need him to win the ball in the last 10 minutes. And he has the experience. If he wins the ball, he'll either be fouled or he'll go down the line, he'll take a shot at the goal, one or the other. So it's just disappointing for the players like them. For Cork fans there today, looking back in that last 10 minutes, that's when you need the likes of Conor Lehan or to stand up, but unfortunately he didn't.
Yeah, unfortunately he didn't, because he had come right into it at that stage. But then again, you can only get, like, Limerick took over the field. And there's, like, I mean, if you're being destroyed all over the field, it's not easy for a forward.
It is. Like, on Lehan, like, no more than any of us, we're confidence players. We need the confidence to get going. But I think he, more than anyone, really needs it for some reason. I've marked him a couple of times when I was in the backs there for a couple of years. And, you know, once you get on top of him, you know, you can nearly feel that his head drops and he gets down. But, look, I think he's such a good player and he's so talented and he's so fast. It's very hard to know where to put him. I think they're probably thinking maybe put him inside O'Horgan, sort of, there's a lot of space, you know, he can win a lot of ball, he can get out in front. You know, if that doesn't work, we bring him to the half forward line and he could do a lot of work there and give the ball in. But it's hard to pinpoint an actual proper position for him. And I know last year he played really well in around the half forward line. He was moving over and back and we were saying, who's going to mark this? But, like, once he's marked tightly and the space isn't there for him to run into, you know, he can kind of question himself a little bit sometimes.
Right, okay, maybe that's it. So it's funny that you say you marked him. JJ was wing back until he marked him, and he gave JJ such a scutch, and JJ or Cody put him back in full back.
So, and you would go back up to the forward call after him.
And you retired, sent you back up to the forward. So basically, your two careers at wing back were over. So yeah, you're not really giving too much sympathy for him. I mean, where do Cork go from here, lads? Because, like, this is 2 years in a row now.
Yeah. And very disappointed. Mark Coleman didn't really fire either, like, you know what I mean? You're on that big stage, you'd be hoping he'd fire, like, but Darragh Fitzgibbon had a fabulous game.
He
was absolutely brilliant. He took off there a couple of stages and just let people for dead. But look, they're going to have to find a new three or four new players over the winter, no matter where they come from. If they come for that under 21 team, they're going to have to find them, because as what Limerick showed him yesterday, it's a panel game now at the moment, so they're going to have to kind of look. I suppose Ali Carrigan will be back there next year again, which would be a huge plus, but they're going to have to find a few new players now.
Yeah, but would you question their character for winning an All Ireland here? Like, I mean, that's two All Ireland semi finals. They were favourites to win, and, like, I mean, whatever about the Waterford one last year, they could say Catalan got sent off and things conspired. Waterford played brilliantly, but they had this game won, lads. Like, I mean, this game was over. Let's be honest. Like, I'd say there's no one even in Limerick outside of the players on the field and the management thought Limerick were going to win that game.
Yeah, no, I don't think I question the character of the team at all. Like, what were they? They were six up with 8 minutes to go, so they should have seen it out. Yeah. I think if they just maybe pick up a three or four or five players that will probably strengthen the squad that they could bring in and freshen it up a bit, because they have the nucleus of a really good team that could go on and compete in All-Ireland, definitely, there's no doubt. And they're very, very close to it. It's not as if they're not winning it and they're not doing it, not doing well. They're doing well underage, they're winning Munster titles, they're getting to the semi-finals, just small little tinkers that, and maybe this, the extra players is what they really need.
But they don't want this to become a thing now.
No, you know what I mean?
Cause
it's important year from next year now.
Because this is Munster domination, Croke Park, blow up. You know what I mean?
Patrick Horgan is a seventh or eighth semi-final yesterday, and he only won one. 2013. You know what I mean? Something like that builds up and builds
it
up.
It does, and then it's a thing.
It's
and
a partner year from next year.
Like Rory McIlroy with the Masters now, it's suddenly become a thing.
So Munster final win next year probably won't be good enough for Cork. They'll have to go on and get to an All-Ireland final now if they want to show progression, like, you know.
Because even, like, I mean, last year you could say at the end of the year they came kind of from nowhere and won Munster, and you can wrap up the year, look, Alan got sent off, we'll be back next year. This year be a big stinger for them now, won't it? Like, I mean, very hard to get over that one.
Will be hard to someone, definitely, there's no doubt. But look, they'll just have to get back on the horse and go at it again. There's no other way about it, and I'm sure they will pick up a couple of players next year and they'll be thereabouts. And maybe Munster won't be their priority, like, it'll be they're trying to get going and get going and get back to Croke Park and get a few wins there. That's what they want.
I think that's it. You'll have all these kind of meetings now, and where was our focus, and it was our league, did we run out of steam? But like, I maybe you should probably just credit Limerick for being an unstoppable force. Like, it's not the first time they've done it this year.
If you look at the games, all the cracking games we had this year, Limerick are involved in the majority.
Most of them, kind of way, so
you can't argue the point now in regarding where Limerick deserve to be in the All-Ireland final. It's just unfortunate Cork met that particular team, you know. So, but then again, 10 minutes ago, you'd have put your house on Cork going on to win it, you know. But it's funny.
It's a funny old game, for the greatest game in the world, isn't it? Right, the other one, lads, let's try and make sense of this, because I tweeted after about 15 minutes, this is men against boys. Like, this just looked like a senior team against an under 21 team. This was throwing Galway were throwing Clare around like little, like children. Like, it was unbelievable. 1-7 to a point up. So what the hell changed here?
Look, I think watching it again, it looked like Clare kind of just froze for a bit. They didn't know what was happening. You know, they weren't sure, you know, where people were playing, what kind of game plan. It looked like that Galway were just dominating, and it looked like a challenge game to a certain degree. In fairness, they did regroup again, Clare, and their main men, you know, stepped up when really, really counted. And they got they started chipping away and didn't panic, which is incredible character to have in the team like that, because usually when you're say 1-7 to 1-8 down
against Galway
you're like, Jesus, we need to get a few goals, let's start lumping the ball in from the forward line. But they didn't panic, they kept doing what they need to do, getting the ball to the wings, getting the ball to Tony Kelly and having shots and getting scores and just keep chipping away. And then it just turned for them, the small little things. They started winning more balls in the rucks and everything, and then obviously Galway hitting an awful lot of wides.
Huge amount of wides. When they're on top, like, they should have buried them. They had a foot in the throat when they didn't really finish them off, you know, and drove a lot of wides in that particular first 15-20 minutes especially. You know, and just, I was on the line there, and Micheál Dunne was in urging their half hour to get back up the field, because he could sense blood there as well, and it's got a couple more scores that particular time. I'd say Clare wouldn't have come back, but fair play to Clare management. They made a switch, Colin Galvin back, sweeper. He came into the game and he started like a quarterback. He was pinging a ball left, right and centre, and he's picking out their big players as well. And Tony Kelly, fairness to me, he had a brilliant game and stood up when you wanted a big player to stand up. He was there taking shots at the goal all the time, and it was always available for the ball, you know. So phenomenal game. Dottie Burke was on top in the first half, and then John Conlon was on top in the second half. It was a brilliant battle.
Got four off him in the second half. Conlon really stood up and was counted. He really did.
But then again, like, you were talking about the Galway had a sweeper at that particular stage, and he should have been sitting back in front. If you're thinking of someone, who will they sit back in front, it would be John Conlon, because he's a big player for him. If you sit back in front of him, cut off the ball going in there, would have helped out Dottie Burke a bit there as well, like, you know. So, like, Galway, I don't know where they're kind of saying, Jackie was saying last night, they weren't expecting a sweeper, like, you know what I mean. But it was they done it very, very early, like, you know, and they should have counteracted it quicker than they actually did,
and
you know.
Galway have always proven that playing against sweepers, they've destroyed Wexford doing it. Like, this doesn't scare Galway in any way. Hart is always their sweeper, he's their go-to man, so really this shouldn't have been any sort of a shock to Galway, Conor.
No, it shouldn't have been, because I'd say over the course of this year you would have said, well, if they pop a sweeper in there, we'd just pop it in high, and the two lads inside are big enough to win their own ball anyway, so that's what, you know, we were saying all along. But it just didn't seem to happen. It worked for the first maybe 15 minutes, but as soon as Clare came back to them, and then they got some a lot of easy wides. You know, I thought for a team that has gone on to win another Ireland, they should have been, after three or four wides, you'd say, right, let's guarantee we get an X score. Yeah. Let's put it into the right positions instead of having shots from far out that's not going to hit another fifth or sixth wide. But look, they're still there. They're still there, but the injuries, I suppose, would be a huge blow if Cannings is injured as it looked. It looked very bad.
He played on. He played on, and he seemed to be moving all right. I'd say Canning will be grand. I'd say if McInerney's hamstring won't be right.
He was his calf or something. He's on crutches after.
Calf, if you pull a muscle, you don't get back in 6 days. You're gone. Like, forget about that.
He was walking gingerly on it, even going out towards the huddle there just at full time, just before extra time. He was trying to walk on it, he couldn't, so he had to kind of hop over to the team huddle. It didn't look good now,
The long ball into Glynn was running amok, right? So for the first 15 minutes. And for the Conor Cooney goal, Colm Galvin was in there. So I presume he was back sweeping before that goal. It was the points that were kind of adding up. It was 6-1, I think, at that stage. Maybe he's got it back. But you imagine Colm Galvin isn't exactly any man that's going to scare Johnny Glynn on those high balls. But those high balls kind of dried up, or the joy getting off them.
The kind of Patrick Connor was on him at the start, and then it changed over Dave McInerney on him, which he was probably more physically strong enough to break the ball. And then Colm Galvin didn't even try and contest a high ball. He was just there for the break, really, more than anything. Yeah. So that was a good switch as well. And bringing Colm Galvin back actually allowed Conor Cleary to go man to man with Joe. Doesn't matter where he went, the ball was over there. He was shadowing Joe no matter where he was.
Right.
Because Joe picked up a couple of scores earlier on, Colm Galvin was back then. He didn't go half. I'd say Conor Cleary at the start was kind of half conscious of Johnny Glynn in there, kind of winning a high ball in there as well. Yeah. So he was trying to get back before the ball was there. But when Colm Galvin went back as a sweeper, that allowed him just to go man marking Joe, and he took him out of the game completely.
Yeah.
Borderline. Joe should have got a few frees at the time as well. He was kind of very aggressive. Right. Very aggressive.
It looked like that on the telly, or you could see it off camera that he was giving him a lot of attention. So I was wondering, I knew there was a lot of stuff going on already.
It was interesting.
That's what Joe has to expect, I'm sure. Well used to,
he's big enough to take it, alright,
it's a good one actually, because we talked with Matthew O'Hanlon about that Matthew O'Hanlon, when he's centre half back, man marks the centre forward because Sean Murphy's there behind him. That tactical change made a huge difference on the game, because Joe Canning had started it really well too.
Yeah, he did. And I don't think, you can't afford to leave a player like Joe Canning out that far, because he's going to score from out there anyway. So you have to push up on him. And that's what did. And it seemed to help Clare anyway when they did.
Yeah, so like you said, that it was almost like these fellas, Shane O'Donnell popped up. And I think Shane O'Donnell's point was inspirational in a way, because he just threw Hanbury off him. Yeah. And it was like, instead of us being thrown around, now we're thrown year round. And
he got a free, but it was actually more him scoring after throwing your man in the ground. A big lift to the crowd there as well.
Straight after that, then you have Colm Galvin giving two lovely little balls to Tony Kelly, turns, bangs them over. Suddenly the crowd's getting behind him now, and it's 1-7 to 4-5. They get it right back to 2 points and go in 4 down at half time. I was wondering about the psychology, and it's happened to all of us in here, is that you're 10 points up, you're 9-10 points up. Psychologically, I don't care what you are, you think, right, we have this now. And then suddenly there's a comeback on. It's very hard to stem that tide. Cork didn't have the time to stem the Limerick one. They probably thought mentally, we've a great, even to drop off that lid by saying, geez, we've a great chance here if we can see this out.
Yeah.
But that's not, let's push on. It's just mentally, you think.
Yeah, you're not going on to win it then. You're actually seeing out the game. There's a huge difference there.
It goes from 9 to 8 to 7. Then there's a goal, it's 3. And you haven't been prepared mentally for this 3 at all. And in a flash, you're back down to it.
Yeah, and the crowd are on your back and everything. You mightn't get your touch, or something happens, and you're like, Jesus, what's going on here? Yeah. Like, this is a nightmare.
You hear a bit groan from the crowd. No, the whole thing kind of escalates, and every small mistake is big, and you're capitalised. When you're up by 10 points, you make a mistake, they might try to wide, or they might take a shot at the goal. But you make a mistake when you're 2 or 3 points up after them coming back, everything goes over, they hit a purple patch, and it's hard. It's hard to stem that tide now. It's very, very hard.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. And neither of them did it, but we talked about the Limerick bench. The Clare bench scored 1-5, and they're not a bench that's spoken about that much, but Shanahan comes back from a cruciate injury, and apparently that's a pure trademark goal from him, a catch, a turn and a shot, and there didn't seem to even be look to be too much for him to aim at. And you had Ian Galvin scoring two, you had Shanahan getting the goal, Davy Fitzgerald, who had a brilliant game. And you wonder, Cathal Malone always seems to me, while he has that physicality, he's a league hurler rather than a Croke Park hurler, you know what I mean? He's like, he doesn't fit in, he's more of a, he's just like, he's not a racehorse, he's a national hunt horse. does that make any sense? I mean, you're both looking at me here. But like, Davy Fitzgerald like really made an impact. He's like, he's a midfielder there for that team.
So David Bourke now was on a phenomenal amount of ball, like, you know, and he was back in his half back line, but he was getting up the field and scoring as well. So yeah, he was winning that duel hands down, David Bourke was, and that was a great switch by the Clare management again, because he gave David Bourke something to think about, because the first ball came in, David Fitzgerald went like a train straight through the middle, and he scored a point or laid it off.
He got
someone
a point.
Else.
Oh yeah, no, he laid off another one. He did a lot of good things. Lot of work there. He was direct.
Big man too, and that like that now is would suit when you're playing a team like Galway. You need big guys like that around the centre of the field. Like.
Definitely, yeah. The question I'd ask is, you know, the free at the end that Tony Kelly won, would that have been given?
It was a very soft free.
Yeah.
Very soft.
And he knew what he was doing. Yeah. There's no doubt in the world.
The head went back, didn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, Tony knew what he was doing. And also Glennon won a free. David Glennon. Yeah, no.
So was there 2012 to draw it.
Against Sheet 2012. Yeah. But he did it again on Saturday evening. Mm. He threw his head up. Like, it's not the hurling way, is it, to buy those frees? Because usually it's so hard to get them. But I suppose at that stage of the game, all bets are off. Yeah. Like, I mean, you don't have
because
to.
If you're a back, you don't want be the person to for say if Tony Kelly was running at you, you don't want to be the person to stand out of his way, or he burst past the break through the tackle. You'll actually hedge your best now and give away the free, you know what I mean, guarantee to make that tackle just to make sure that you're not the guy to remember that. He just burst through the tackle and slapped it over the bar, you know what I mean.
Psychologically for referees it must be so hard. Like, the Cork equalising free was a dubious free as well, like, your emotion, you're like, a referee's only human.
It is,
the easiest result is a draw. No one will complain with a draw, because it's such a classic.
Everyone is happy as well.
Everyone's happy.
Everyone's keep everyone happy.
Whereas if you give a soft free to draw it up, everybody's happy. If you don't give that soft free and this brilliant game ends up with a poor loser, you're you know what I mean? You're the worst there. Referees are looking for an opportunity to equalise it up. We've seen it for years. Like,
but what would you have done there as a defender with Tony Kelly running? All he wants to do is make contact with you and then just fall back. What do? Do you just try and bear hug him and keep him up?
It's hard to know. Like, he does just want that contact. Remember, he won a real easy one against Waterford in the league final a few years ago. It was the last puck of the game, and he won a terrible handy free. It wasn't a free at all. But I don't know what you do. Like, I mean, you hold your hands out and back off him maybe and wait till he plays it. But that's not, like, I mean, you can't.
He'll be gone past, flick it over.
It's not easy.
It's a tricky one.
You just don't get. I think maybe the Galway defender really gave him what he wanted, didn't he?
You'll always engage the contact there, 100%, 9 times out of 10, somewhere around that, like that, last minute of the game, you're going to try and upset him or knock the ball out of his hand or something like that. Like, but look, they're going to get the free all the time as well. You know, so.
Just to finish up on this, lads, like, I mean, there's one thing, Galway's character really, like, I mean, they showed it against Kilkenny so much, and against on Clare, like, I mean, Clare had that game won, really. It was 2 points up in injury time, and Galway came back and got 3 in a row, you know, like, I mean, they showed a lot of character with their main men gone off the field. That, you know, I don't think Galway get enough credit. Like, Clare probably coming out of that game, and rightly so, with most of the credit, but, you know, Galway deserve an awful lot as well.
I was delighted for Johnny Cohen, actually. He had a great chance in normal time, but then he didn't go hiding either. He was down there an extra time, he slapped it over the bar as well. Like, you know,
is that
I mean?
His bad side? Is he left? I always think his points are always off his left rather than off his right.
He's more probably comfortable now with the one he did take, but the one, I'd say he tried to just have the perfect shot and didn't want to miss hit it, and he took too much time at it, more than anything, you know, and then hit it straight into the keeper. But in fairness to him, he popped up when Galway needed him as well, like, you know, and had the balls to take that shot at the goal near the end too, like, so very easy for, like, he'd be renowned as a defender, not a scorer, like, you know, it's very, very easy for him to stay back at that particular time, but he made the run, got the ball and slapped it over the bar. It's delightful for him, like.
Sometimes when taking those shots, you know it's a big shot and you don't want to put it wide, so you're just going to hit it just enough to get it, you know, over, and I obviously didn't hit it enough. Yeah. But
you're going for accuracy more than power, aren't you?
That's it, yeah. You're gliding it over.
Yeah, yeah, trying to. But fair play to him, exactly. He didn't go hiding and he got another opportunity to see it right, which he did.
Yeah, no, definitely. Galway deserve a lot of credit. As we've gone way over on that, we'll talk more against Galway and Clare on Thursday when we're previewing another weekend of hurling. You know, what's to complain about here? We'll come back with performance of the weekend.
Yeah, we do. We have a farm back home, so we have a big farm back home, and we have cattle and sheep, and we have a few donkeys as well. So we had a couple of filly donkeys, so I brought them down, and so we actually sold them to. I think we had four donkeys on the day, and we sold them to a man from Wexford. So we did. So there's the piebald donkeys from there, and there's the traditional donkey, and there's the Spanish donkey, and then there's the
Spanish donkey.
You see them on the beaches, never. And so you can actually one time the donkey was useless, right? But now some people have started to get back into them because you can use them for headage, and it's used towards your bonuses, your grants. A donkey in Eden, a donkey needs a palace.
Paddy Power performance the weekend, and we've probably covered a lot of these lads already, but I'll talk about one that we haven't covered, and that's Graham Mulcahy, who really came into a game at the end of the first half when Cork were kind of in control of the game at that stage, and he's marking Sean O'Donoghue, who's a bloody sticky marker, and he scores three in a row to Limerick back into it. So he buzzed around, and he was only brought off because of fatigue. I think he lost the ball under the Cusick stand. Yeah. He was wrecked.
But for his first score, Limerick didn't score for 9 minutes. They didn't score from the 20 minutes to the 29 minutes. He got three in a row then as well. Huge scores for Limerick just to bring him back into the game, because they needed something before half time, just give him a jolt, really, more than that, just to get a half time in touch and distance as well. But he's very, very accurate off the left. He favours the left more than anything. But people know that before the marking, but he's very, very hard to stop. Very
he's elusive. So speedy,
very elusive. He can turn on a sixpence there as well, but he favours the left all the time, but he's very, very accurate when he gets in.
I thought what the classic point was, is just after popping into my head, is Flanagan and Catalan are wrestling over the ball, and Catalan just comes in, I'll take that. I don't know where Donoghue was at that stage, but he just comes in and says, well, if you two are going to fight over it, I'm just going to take this. I thought that was a classic. Here's one that we spoke about on the podcast, and twice Sean O'Donoghue he did this to Mulcahy. He stuck the hurling between his leg and tripped him up. He got a yellow the second time. We talked about that recently, didn't we, JJ?
Damien was giving out there recently, wasn't he?
Oh, it was Damien. JJ did it to Damien in the All-Ireland final in 2012. So I don't know what happened in a game, and I was just curious to know. It seems like such an easy thing to do. It's like putting a stick into the spokes of a bicycle.
Especially when you're not as fast as your man you're going to be running after.
But we saw it twice. O'Donoghue stuck in between Mulcahy's legs. He clearly knew what he was doing and got the yellow the second time for a call.
Listen to podcast there, Willie, is he?
But I was actually laughing looking at it, because that was the first time, the last time that I'd seen it, and I was like, Jesus, this, I don't know why they don't do this more often, but they obviously do, and my mind was never kind of open to it.
Yeah, definitely. If a lad has a bit of pace and you don't want him to show you up, you'll do it, and you can't take him down, and that's the easiest way to do it.
Yeah.
Is it? Just stick the hurt. Look, innocently, would you get it? Would it be 50-50 on the times you get away with that, or is it just too obvious?
It depends how you do it. JJ got away with it for years.
In an All-Ireland final on Damien. And then Conal, to add insult to injury, all the Kilkenny lads come around, surround the referee and say, Damien, dive better this lecture. That really was brilliant. Peter Duggan, lads, right? So we mentioned the unbelievable pint. I think that he scored an unbelievable pint in the first half where he banged the ball off the ground, and we see that. I just think that's a beautiful thing to see. We know the spectacular one, but the one I loved the most was the puck out he got, and he didn't even wait a second, caught it, banged down, and almost drove it back into the hill and then put that back, where it came from. That kind of thing, when I looked at it, I was just like, Jesus, now that's inspiring. He did it so fast, as in, get that back down, you know, that kind of way. He's just, I think it was a 3 from play and the rest, he got 14 in total, but he really manned up. He's there for his size. Well, he's obviously much more than that, but this year, he's been in there as that physical presence, and he's way more to his game than that.
He does. He's really shown the hurler that he is now in the last couple of games, and I think not only does he bring the physicality, which he's probably was nearly there for at the start, but his hurling has come on leaps and bounds since, you know, over this course of the season, and I just love the way he's just so raw, and he just goes and does everything. He breaks through everything. Nothing seems to be a problem to him. You know, he wants to catch it in the air, He wants to drill it over the bar. He absolutely drills it over the bar. You know, and the point that he got, it just sums up the game that he had, flicking it over lads, and the confidence that he has, and the hurling that he has to get the strike and put it over. Unbelievable.
Yeah. He's been a lot of ball in the air as well for this Clare team, which kind of freed up John Conlon to go into the full forward line as well. It's a huge player, like it, not only what he's doing himself, but he's freeing up John Conlon to go in there, because John for years always had to win his own ball and kind of score as well. But whereas now you're saying, he's what are we going to do with Peter Duggan as well now from the puck out? So he was always their go to guy for the puck out as well, like big man, and he works very, very hard as well.
Fair old engine for a man of his size. Like, he's in great shape. John Conlon, obviously, lads, got those four off Burke, which is no mean feat. We very rarely see Burke getting that much trouble, don't we? And I know people were talking about Burke being injured, but he didn't look like he was injured, so let's forget about the injury altogether. I don't think he was.
When you're out there, you're not injured, simple as that. I mean, you can't use that as an excuse either. Like.
Yeah, he has that ability, Conlon, and it's still, again, his go-to run out under the Cusick stand, and the power he can generate off that left side from it, he throws it up behind him, you know.
He's very hard to block down, isn't he? He just goes off, and he's so strong as well. Like, he had a brilliant, brilliant game. But just a note on that, he worked there as well in the second half extra time. He caught a puck out then and won a huge ball for Galway as well. So I'd say you wouldn't dent his confidence, you know what I mean? No matter if the ball is there, he's going to attack the ball and get it. But John Conlon was brilliant in the second half. Thought he had the better in the first half, but a lot of better ball was going into John Conlon in the second half as well, probably down to Colin Galvin in the sweeper role as well. He had time to pick him out and hit low ball in there as well, and he won a great ball, and I think it was it Ian Galvin scored a point there. He knocked a lovely layoff to Ian Galvin as well, but he's the focal point. Everything that Clare do well, John Conlon is involved in the majority of the stuff, you know.
Yeah, no, you definitely need that. Has he always been that big, Conlon? Like, his arms are just like he looks like he's done a serious amount of strength conditioning, or maybe I've just noticed it, Conlon.
Yeah, he's always fairly.
I'd say Donny Burke's
big,
just a monster. He would never saw a gym in his life, probably. Yeah. But Conlon's arms just looked, you know,
Anytime I've come up against him, he seems to be always that size. Yeah. You know,
he
just seems to be naturally big anyway. But I think what was really impressive was I think in the first half it didn't really go too well for him. But like sometimes at half time in the dressing room, you didn't play well in the first half, it can be very difficult, you know, to tell yourself, okay, now I'm going to do it in the next 35 minutes, I'm going to do it. But he really did it, you know.
Yeah.
He really took the game, and he went looking for the ball and took the responsibility of getting the scores, which is not always easy to do in a big game after you're having a bad maybe 20 minutes
or a quiet. That's it, because it's always easy, like it's always very difficult to have a good second half after having a bad first half. It's rare when you think back at your good second half. They're coming off the back of a good first one. That meant mentally. The last two lads are Aaron Gillan and Shane Dowling, and like I think performance the weekends between Peter Duggan, Aaron Gillan and Shane Dowling. Like, I mean, Shane Dowling didn't play that long. He scored 1-4. Would Limerick have won that game without him? Absolutely not. Was he the catalyst for the comeback? Absolutely. Do you deserve man of the match for that period of time, or does somebody who is good throughout the whole, like, I mean, how that's help me decide here, lads, because I'm not too sure.
That's the debate we had yesterday now as well. Would you give man of the match to Shane? He was up in the running with a boy, so we couldn't justify it for the small period he was on, you know. So we went for Aaron Gillan in the end, but he made a phenomenal performance when he came on. Again, he had a point to prove, and that's brilliant for John Kiley to have a guy like that now come on, right attitude, and come on and say, I'll show you what I'm capable of, but showing the right way, you know what I mean? He was still there and throwing balls off to Aaron Gillan for a goal opportunity before extra time. It wasn't just about himself, it was about Limerick getting to the All-Ireland final, and he was a big, big part to play in that.
Yeah. See, can you give Gillan man of the match? Like, 13 is very impressive, but it should have been 3-13.
Yeah, it should have been 3-13, but
they're three huge score. They're 2-1-on-1, 3-1-on-1s, 3-on-1-on-1s with a goalie, and you're getting no return off them.
Got 2 points over it, did he?
Oh no, he got two points. Yeah. Sorry, okay, my bad. But so instead of 9, he gets 2.
Yeah.
Do you know? Did you not discuss this with Sky yesterday?
We'll get you in money for next week.
You need a contrary fella like me. What do you think, Conal? Are we going to hold the three goals against Aaron Gillan?
No, I don't think he could. I think his performance in general was really, really good. If he took the opportunity for the goals, it would have been an unbelievable performance. But he still has a lot to work on. And look, he still scored 14 points. I don't care if 11 was for Freeze. It's still an unbelievable performance from a young lad like that in corner forward.
Yeah, no, Aaron Gillan got 13 points. He got six of them were from play, so he got 7 Freeze, and it was Peter Duggan, I think, got 11.
Oh, sorry,
11
yeah,
Freeze
yeah.
And 3 from play, and Shane Dowling got one from Freeze and penalties and 3 from play.
But on Dowling, I wonder, will you know the Limerick management say, well, look at how, like, for not to start him, look at how well you did when you came in, you changed
the
game.
That's the danger. That's the danger. Now, Shane Dowling didn't play all year and then started against Waterford and blew them away. He was brilliant. Yeah. Back on the Freeze, because Gillan had been suspended from the Cork match. He gets back in. Then they had that terrible performance. Now, where they didn't perform right throughout the field. Like, no Limerick player, you could say, played well that day. Dowling had a disaster that day. Then he gets dropped.
Yeah.
So, like, you've got two starts. One brilliant game, one disaster. Yeah. Now he's a super sub, and he's a super sub against Kilkenny. I think he's fallen into the super sub. I think Shane Dowling's going to have to realise that you're affecting the game that well.
Too much, like.
Your good attitude is counting against you.
Yeah. He needs to pull a strop, I think.
But, like, I mean, I think that's part of why he said to Kylie. Because, like, I'm sure Shane Dowling's so honest that I'd say he knows himself. That even after the game, because I could be seen as a super sub here now.
Everyone
wants to start. Like, I'd say Dowling can't believe his luck that they got the extra period, because he came on after 56 minutes. It's only 15 minutes for a player of his calibre. You know, that's not enough for him. You know, and then he gets the extra 20, so suddenly then that's 36. So he probably, that's alright, but that's extra time. Shane Dowling, for an All-Ireland final, doesn't get to parade. Do you know what I mean? I saw somebody tweeting me yesterday saying that the whole both squads should do the parade because it's a 20-man game now, and why should someone who's played such a big part in the game not have that? Because let's be honest, the parade is a beautiful it's a brilliant experience, and so many, like, half your squad doesn't get it. Would it look a bit weird to have two full squads parading around?
I don't know, I think they could do it.
Another 10
lads.
A few lads in track and just win tops, maybe. Or not even
and
in tops.
Let them talk out.
I think it's a good idea.
It would be a good idea, because just a kind of acknowledgement of what they've done throughout the year. You're not a kind of
because we know.
Just as who's a lucky starting 15 doesn't. Why should they?
And that's the thing. And
did I experience really more than anything, you know?
This is tradition, the 15, because traditionally 15 played, and you might have one sub. But now it's 20 lads playing every game. Practically,
if you're talking about tradition, a whole tradition has gone out the window this year. So this would be the year to actually start this.
Yeah,
but obviously it won't, because
it won't this year. But it's a small thing though.
What would happen if they did it? I remember when we played.
Joe Higgins brought his two sons around in it.
Leash
County Board were fine. That was in the Leinster final against Kildare, I think. Or did he do it against Dublin in the semi final as well?
He did it against Dublin, I think, as well.
Right.
Because I remember thinking.
He might have done it. He might have done it in 05. I wasn't there. That thing. No, it was 05. Maybe it was that Leinster final against G. He had twins. Like, I mean, he was only 18 when he had them, so they would have been 4 or 5, and he had them in the parade. Leash were fined for not whatever. Yeah. But I'm surprised, actually, you're right that no manager has said I don't care about the fine. This is love him for that?
Yeah.
Wouldn't the panel go, Jesus? They'd love him.
It's like the photograph. The photograph now is all the panel. It's never just the 15. Everyone goes to the panel.
Rightly so. Right, who are we giving these to, lads? We'll take a vote on this, because we actually did no poll, so I'm not overruling anyone. Do you know the one thing? Peter Duggan won it on the poll before, and I overruled the poll. So I said the next time Duggan's in the mix, I'm going to give it to him, because I feel bad about overruling him. But I don't think I can give it to him. For me, it's between Dowling and Gillan.
Any word of Nicky Quaid? No.
Nicky Quaid's flick. I had it for the top of the show. What a brilliant!
You're talking about big. Like, if Limerick won, I mean this. You'd be thanking Nicky Quaid, you know what I mean? I say the all Limerick players were in the dressing room there at just the end of normal time. Go over and thank Nicky Quaid. Thanks, we're still in it. You know, that kind of way, and pay back as much as possible.
Yeah.
But a phenomenal, just for the big player, the big time, like, you know, so it's unbelievable.
Keep his eye on that, like, I mean, and that kind of, because
the easiest thing to do is just go for the man there, you know what I mean? And try and put him off. But geez, eyes on the ball, little flick, absolutely brilliant.
Should Harnedy not have been entertaining a goal there? Should he have been running away from the crowd and sticking it over the bar? That was a real crucial stage.
Not
overcritical again.
Okay. But I think the flick just showed, like, you're always trying to coach kids to keep your eyes on the ball and keep your eyes open and not just smash down on the hurl. Like, that was just perfect. He kept his eyes, he was brave, he just flicked the ball and unbelievable. Like, it was a goal.
Definitely a game over then. They'd be on the bus going home, like, and then play next frame instead. Like.
Yeah, and to wait for him to throw it up, because obviously you've got maybe a window of a second by the time it's thrown up to when it's flicked. You know, I don't know, it probably don't see those flicks away What was it in the game? Oh, it was McInerney throwing his hurl again. He got the block on it. I didn't see it. What a beautiful throw. Jesus, lads. Like, I mean, we haven't spoken about that skill. No. Like, I mean, that's as skillful as you're going to get. That's just a narrow throwing up there. Hopefully, we'll get a contact on it. But, like, honestly, if we've left anything out today, I've tried to get, because I forgot about Quaid's. I had that in the top of the show, but we've gone so far. Oh, one other quick one is we complained before in the show about steps. Aylward has a lot to answer for. Cadogan got rolled yesterday on steps, lads. He played it into his hand. Do you remember that? And Bill Cooper did as well. Neither one were over carrying. And, like, I mean, it's rare in a game that big. We're complaining that 10 steps are being let go. These weren't even four, either of them, especially Cadogan. And they were blown up. But anyways, who am I going, geez, lads, this is a really difficult decision. I should have thought about it before. I'm going to give it to Shane Dowling, because let's be honest, that Limerick would not have won that game without him. And to come on a game like that, it really was Roy of the Rover stuff. I take your points. Gillan was good throughout, 6 points from play. He's brilliant in the air. But I think Shane Dowling made them all just step up that little bit higher. And he had a brilliant, brilliant mentality coming onto the field. And again, brilliant interview on the pitch afterwards as well. So, and I love, like you said, mentioned the way he had mature enough to say, to the Limerick crowd to leave them alone. I'd love to know what happens down in Limerick, lads. Would you have supporters waiting outside your house with flags?
The next 3 weeks, or you know all about it.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, what are they all so worried about? What happens? Be lads up on your roof of your house looking around. Anyways, look, Shane Dowling's performance, Paddy Power performance the weekend, so congratulations to him. Right, and we'll be back. Cheddar will be here on Thursday, and whoever else is available, Michael or Damien, and we'll take a look ahead to the replay. Right, we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.